Hola, welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a bilingual podcast that shares interviews with self-made millionaires, financially savvy investors, and all things financial literacy and dinero. Your host, Natalie Torres, is a two-time TEDx speaker, an award-winning author, investor, and financially savvy Latina that has been featured on NBC, Telemundo, and Forbes as a financial literacy and mental health advocate. She is joined by her co-host, Vera Eagley, an author, investor, and seasoned insurance professional.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I am Vera. As you know, sometimes I do solo interviews because if either one of us is busy, one of us takes the reins. We have a very special guest today, and I'll give you a little bit of background. I know I keep saying this, but I recently moved to Portland. I've now been here maybe a year and change. And I just wanted to meet cool people. And I happened to go to a workshop, and I that's where I met our new guest here. It's really refreshing to find people that are on your level about giving back to the community, that understand the struggles that you also go through. And I think just being a woman, being Latina, and both of us are kind of in very male-dominated industries, it's like, you also have to deal with that. It's exhausting, you guys. So, Berenice León Hurtado, thank you for being here today. I'm so grateful to have met you. And tell us what you do, why you do it, and let's have a chat.
My name is Berenice León Hurtado, and I am a credit union mortgage loan officer and also a real estate investor. I was born in Michoacán, Mexico, and immigrated to Idaho, of all places in the United States. And I think like a lot of, you know, us Latinos, growing up, we didn't have a lot of the finance education. We still don't. And growing up, it was always very much you work, you save money, you don't borrow any money. And that was it. So that's kind of all I grew up with. And, you know, I always like to tell people about my journey going into college and how I really screwed up my habits and finances to the point so bad that I almost got kicked out of my sorority house for not paying my rent on time. So it was a point in my life where there was a lot of guilt and shame and embarrassment that came with not being on track with my finances. And, you know, as the universe would have it, the universe took me to Portland, and my first job of all jobs was being a teller in downtown Portland, Oregon. And from there, I think being exposed to so many different people and talking about finances all the time really broke down this taboo of talking about money is bad. And being a teller took me to being a banker. I've always been really good with numbers. Really, you know, I found my niche in lending, and that ultimately took me to what I'm doing now, which is being a mortgage loan officer in real estate. Once I was in real estate, I was helping people buy their first house, their second house, their first investment property, figuring out how to get them into all these properties. And then I got to the point of like, well, heck, like I'm helping these people do it all the time. Why am I not doing it?
Like, what about me? What about
exactly,
me and my niece?
Like, I'm literally giving you the guidebook on how to do this. And here I am not doing it. So, you know, at this time, my husband and I already had a home, and the timing was just right where we decided, you know, it's time to upgrade, to get a bigger house. And a lot of it had to aligned with us, you know, having a more pay in our income. It also was around the same time that my father-in-law was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and we knew that at one point we were going to want to take him in, and we needed a bigger space and a space that was equipped to have him here. So it all just turned into us buying another house, us really evaluating, do we sell our house for a bigger down payment? What do we do? And ultimately, we decided to keep our first house, which then became a rental to my sister and my niece. And that provided financial stability for them, right? They're around the corner from us now. So our my beginning journey with like purchasing home was always family based. We're doing this because it's time and it was with family included. And eventually then it turned into taking on a little bit more risk. And that was with buying bigger properties and buying them for the purpose of having them be like short-term rentals and then learning what that's all about. So, you know, I approach finances really through my lived experience and my experience of working both in corporate banking and in a credit union space. I've been in those space for 15 years now, a little over 15 years. And what I've learned is that finances is different for everybody. Everyone starts differently. There's a lot of emotion, so much emotion.
Yeah,
that comes a lot of with emotion. Finances. And you, like, I have to approach it with empathy, with understanding, with compassion. And I like a lot of the times there's two things that I always, you know, when I'm working with people, I remember is one, how I felt at my lowest with my own finances and how I didn't need someone to say, do better. Like, you know, like that's not what I needed. And the other thing, you know, coming from like being an immigrant and having parents that mainly just speak Spanish is I see how much my parents struggle in the finance industry. So when I work with my Latinos, it's, well, how would I want my parents to be treated? And that is very different than how somebody else might want to get treated. That's sometimes a little bit, I can't just say, oh, here, submit the application online or just do this online. It's a lot more smaller steps. It's a lot more guidance, more explanation. And that's taken me, you know, I think even to where I am now, where I want to help people as much as I can to have them achieve their goals and always going at it with compassion and with how do I want my parents to get treated when they're in these spaces that they don't know anything about. So that's kind of a little bit of all.
I love that. That is, it really shines a light on your story. And I love how vulnerable and willing you are to share your highs and lows, because I think we all say we share that, but we don't really when it comes down to it, because there a lot of times we still have a little bit of shame, or we're just like, no, I don't want people to look at me differently, right? But I picked up on two things. One of them is this concept of money is bad. We have this mm-hmm. conversation a lot here. I mean, it's called Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, because it takes more than 20 minutes to unpack all of this, but it can be overwhelming. So we try to give people like bite-sized things just to kind of chew on and reflect and then come back to. But why do so many people have, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, this idea that money is bad? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you asked that, because, I mean, I think it comes from two spaces, right? There's the looking at what others have and you not having it, and then associating success with money. So if I don't have money, I'm not successful, right? And then that emotion, that guilt comes back in of, I don't want to talk about money because I don't have it, or I don't know how to get it. And then once you do reach the level of having money, of being financial stable, then the guilt comes of having it. And then you, if you do talk about it, then there's the am I being como presumida, ¿verdad? Like, and talking about money and all you care about is money. And there's all these like inner thoughts of, I think overall, like, because a lot of us don't grow up talking about money, and like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, people that have money talk about how they're getting their money all the time. And when you don't grow up with money, and then when you get to the point where you do have it, there's just a guilt and a swish, like a switch that happens all the time. And I've seen that even with like my family, right? Of some people being like, oh, well, like they have too much credit card debt, or they have too much this, or they don't have enough credit. And then the people that I work with a lot also, it's the associating your worth sometimes with your credit score. And that's not at all like how what credit's intended for, but people do feel their financial worth tied to their credit score. So there's just, I think in my opinion, there's just so much like guilt because of how we in society just talk about success and money tied together that we just don't want to talk about it, period.
Yeah, what's funny is my husband is from Europe, and where he's from, he when he got exposed to the credit score system in the United States, he was like, this is insanity. Like,
it's
you
ridiculous.
Want me, you have, yeah, he basically didn't exist in the United States when he came here because he had no credit cards here. He had none of that. So I'm like, oh, we gotta get you into debt so that you can exist. He's like, this is crazy. So I mean, it's a very, I wouldn't say just American because I can't speak for all countries, but in the United States, it can be difficult. And I now the way you articulated it, I understand why people place so much of their emotion and success feelings on credit scores. Well, I can't get this. I can't get that because my credit score is low. I'm like, okay, who cares? There are so many other ways that you can get things. Talk to Vedit. But
yeah, exactly.
I'm so glad you highlighted that.
It is. And you know, that's what I like when I'm working with people and talking to people in general. I am honest. I'm like, I've had really bad credit and I've had really great credit. And I don't know if I'll have bad credit again because I like borrowing money. I like borrowing money for my properties. I like renovating. I like doing this and that. So sometimes my credit score might be doing this sometimes. And it doesn't, like, credit scores are just not a reflection of how savvy you are with finances. Credit score is a reflection of whether you'll pay a little extra to get what you want or pay a little less. Right? Like that, like that's what the credit score is really doing. If you have a lower credit score, you're going to pay more out of pocket for things. If you have a higher credit score, you'll pay less. But it's really not, like, life happens. And, you know, I think what I see that's so painful a lot of the times is medical debt, like people that are in problems with like medical debt. And there's, I like telling this story of I was really proud of getting my credit score to in a high position, right? Because after having it low for such a long time when I was young. And then I went to apply for a car and then I saw that it was low again. And I was like, what? Like, I've been doing everything right. And it turns out I had a collection from a library that I didn't know anything about from checking out an audiobook or something that I never returned. And then that was the next thing is the just because you end up having your credit or not working on your credit, you still have to monitor what it's doing. You have to know what's on your credit report because you never know what's affecting it. And it's just getting used to saying like, what is it? Like, can I work on this? Can I improve it? Like, what do I do? Because having lower credit didn't mean I wasn't getting a car. It just meant I was going to be paying more every month. You know, and like really shifting it like that, where having higher credit means you're saving money. Having lower credit means that, you know, sometimes you aren't able to get a loan, but it also most of the time just means that you're going to pay more.
And also there are so many ways to improve your credit. So don't despair.
So many ways.
Again, talk to Vedit.
Yes. So many ways. Yes. Talk to me.
So I want to know about your short-term rentals. How are they going? Is there one that, like, we talked offline, so is there one that really you are looking to to put at the forefront?
Yes. It's my child right now. And it's the ranchito. We call it el ranchito, or also the farm. And it's this property that we bought. It's 10 acres out in Willamette Valley in wine country with a beautiful view of just like vineyards. And it's just like a beautiful property. And that one, you know, same thing. That was our dream property that we purchased that has served as passive income for myself and my husband. And it's also basically created generating income for my parents, who also like live on the property now. And it's, we didn't, you know, and like, to be honest with you, we bought it being like, okay, we'll try this Airbnb thing out. And it took off a lot more than we thought it was going to. Like, we thought we might get like some money here and there. And it turned out there's a lot of people that want to go and stay out in wine country and do the wine tasting experience, or are coming out of town for graduations, or are coming out of town for weddings and all these things. And we started to just have a lot more people come to the home. And when my mom and my dad moved into the property, my mom like maintains the house, and we pay her for that. And my mom is just the cutest thing. Like, we just started finding little knickknacks that were very like Esmeralda like around the house, and they were very her and my dad go to Mexico a lot, so we started just finding like cazuelas displayed randomly somewhere, or like these little porquito like napkin holders in like random places, and just like little like things that reminded me of my roots of being like Mexicana, of my parents. And then we really started to embrace this of like having this house be more a reflection of myself, of my family, and started putting art that was very like Latino, Latina based, from locally here in Portland, started to fill it with plantitas. So I think in the house, we probably have, I don't know, probably close to 200 plants like spread throughout the house. And you walk in, it's just very vibrant, just full of life. And right now, what we're working on, what we want to do is we get a lot of like non-Latinos coming and staying at this, at our house. And we want to get more Latinos to come out to wine country. One of the big reasons is, you know, we love wine. We love our wine. We go wine tasting, and the people serving us our wine, everything that we're looking and seeing about the wine, there's a big disconnect with the people that are harvesting those grapes. And there are people that look like us, they're like Latinos, you know, like working all this. And I want to just build a bridge of, you can come to wine country and also experience like authentic roots that are from Mexico, right? And I want like Latinos to feel comfortable coming to my space and saying, I belong here. I belong here, and I also can go wine tasting, right? So I have a lot of plans that I want to do, but my overall goal, my vision, my baby is to really just have more Latinos experience wine country in Oregon.
You are the one to remove the intimidation for that, because that's another thing that I've had the pleasure of meeting up with and chatting with Vede a couple of times. And one of the things I love is, you know, we get deep real fast. And we talked about how like our parents, they would never naturally go wine tasting had we not taken them first, had, you know, had a friend of a friend not already gone to the place. And then they'll go to the same place because they don't want to explore a new place, right? So yes. I'm so happy that you're doing this, and you're going to be the voice of this, because it's not about, oh, now we've made it. No, it's just in general about opening up our horizons, embracing everything. We live in this country. We may as well learn all about it, and also understand how much Latinos put into this country, and not that we are the other, right?
That's the big thing, right? There's this very special feeling of belonging when I get to take my parents to go wine tasting and have them, you know, be poured a glass of wine. And I think you and I talked about that, right? Where it takes a long time. For my parents, it took a long time for them to feel comfortable. And now they're like, okay, ¿cuándo vamos a ir a tomar vino? You know, like now it's very much like, let's go. Ya está pagada. Because we have a couple memberships here and there. And they're like, well, ya está pagada. Let's go.
Yeah, and let's like not waste it.
Just, yeah, exactly. And even, you know, I've even like learned more about wine and like how being in like, I'm from Michoacán, and even in like in Mexico, like there's this big wine like culture also. And I didn't know anything about it. But here, living here, it's just not something, you know, we like our cerveza, our tequila, things like that. But the wine, and there is, you know, even like now, a lot of like Latino and Latina winemakers, and, you know, presenting them and like talking about them, even in my property, that's something that I want to do too, is just showcase these other Latino winemakers of, yes, we drink it. Yes, we help make it. And yes, we freaking like are like winemakers. Like, we're all of it.
I absolutely love every second of that. And if you're in Oregon, hit us up. Let's go to wine country. If you're in California, yes, in Southern California, there's Valle de Guadalupe, just right over the border. And it is amazing. It's like the Napa of Baja. So go check it out. But first, come here. Talk to us. Yes. Let's go into it. Because I told Betty, I'm like, I want to explore all sorts, because I still have yet to conquer wine country out here. So I'm really excited to,
we have to do this.
Great. So Betty, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, if they are looking, you know, again, this isn't about like, I want to buy my house tomorrow. She can also help you just plan out, even if it's a year, 2-3 years, that's what she's also here for. Where can they contact you?
Yeah, I would say right now, probably LinkedIn is going to be the best way, at Berenice León Hurtado. Shoot me a message. And, you know, I think that's, I'm glad that you said that, right? Like the plan out, because there is a big misconception of, I have to be ready to buy a house to talk to a loan officer. And there's a reason for that too, right? Like it's at some point somebody might have gone and they've been like, oh, you're not ready. And here's your denial and like, see you later. Right. Like there's just this big thought, but really like I'm here to help you prepare. And once you're ready, that's the easy part. That's the easy part. Once you're ready to submit your application, once you're ready to get started, that's easy. It's what are the steps to get you to, yes, I'm ready. That's the part where I don't see a lot of talk about that out. You know, we talk about how investing in real estate is great, but what are the steps to even like get you there to see if that's the right path? And I'm here for it. Like, that's probably my favorite thing about my job is the education part of it. And the, you know, just motivating people to get on and take the next leap.
Thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to have you back so we can talk all about your ranchito.
To learn more about the podcast, follow us on Instagram at FinSavvy in 20 minutes, and catch our interviews on YouTube. If you want to become a sponsor, hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, reach out to us at financiallysavvyin20minutes.com or send us a DM. All it takes is 20 minutes out of your day to become financially savvy.